outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bavada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Good Tuesday morning to you again, regardless of when you get to hear this. This is when we get to put it on. Embracing His glory. Exploring that process of transformation whereby we become people who are lost in the darkness to beholding the greatest stuff in the universe, in the Father and Son and Spirit, growing in our capacity to trust what they're doing in us is filled with love and life, and then being able to follow Him wherever He goes. This is one of the verses that makes me laugh whenever I read it from John. Jesus writes about it, or Jesus speaks it in the Upper Room Discourse in John 15. He says, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." It makes me laugh because can you imagine any friendship that would get anywhere if that's how it started? If I said to anybody, "Hey, we could be good friends if you do whatever I command you," it'd be hilariously absurd to think that that's a basis for friendship. But when Jesus says it, what he's pointing to is this: I'm always going to be right. So you're going to be my friend no matter what you do. The prodigal son loved by the father, even out in the pig pen, James, John, Peter, the other disciples, when they're making bad choices about being first in the kingdom or calling down fire from heaven or whatever, Jesus is still their friend. Because friendship is how he wins us into the reality that transforms us. So he's always our friend. I think what he's saying is, you are my friends if you do whatever I command you, which is the most arrogant thing to say for any human to say to another human. But for Jesus, the Son of God, to say it to us, what he's saying is this: you'll live out the rewards of this friendship when you do the things that I ask you to do. That's where this journey takes on meaning. We talked about following last time, and this is where the following comes down to it, that our prayers and our looking into the reality and the truth will set us free, and knowing that truth is that recognition that this is never a friendship between two equals. It's not that I've got some good stuff and Jesus got some good stuff and we're going to get our good stuff together. It's that Jesus has all the good stuff. And it's not that I'm wrong about everything. There's a lot of times, like when I go on vacation or even just in life, every moment is not an act of obedience to Christ for which I need to have some insight and whatever. It's not that. What's so important about this journey for us is that God's coming to live our life with us. So it's not, I'm coming so that you'll do everything I want you to do. He's just saying, when I speak to you, follow me. Because I'm not just saying stuff to make your life miserable. I'm not just saying stuff because I've got this gigantic ego and I want everybody to serve me. Honestly, in a religious construct, that's how I saw some of it. God just in charge of everything. He knows everything. He just wants everybody following him. And if he doesn't, he whacks them in various ways. It's just sad that I saw him that way. And as I've been on this living love journey for now 25, 26, 27 years, and God's been rewriting some of the stuff in my life, it's not now, oh, he's right, I'm going to follow him, or the consequences are really ridiculous. It's, oh, he's got the best stuff in the whole world. He navigates circumstances in ways I would never think of. He knows how to handle difficult people in ways that if I just get into it and then try and do what I think is best for me, it's going to get worse and worse because I'm responding that way, they're responding that way, and it just grows into all of that. So he says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. But in the same context, he's also said this a couple of times. This is the qualifier on that, because then we just think, well, God just wants to use us. That's why he wants followers. And I know many people who've rejected Christianity because they felt God was a user. God just wanted to use them, and they got tired of being used. But here's what else Jesus says in these conversations. He talks about, I'm saying these things to you so that my joy might be in you, and your joy might be full. So it's not God wanting to use us. It's not God saying, I need some puppets around the planet so I can accomplish stuff I want to accomplish, and I just want to use you little humans until you're worn out to death. Religion sometimes does that to us, but God doesn't. No, he talks about this commingling of the Father's glory and our participation in it from the standpoint of joy. And from the standpoint, the other thing that's in this passage repeatedly is answered prayer. And I know this confuses so many people because Jesus says things like, if you ask the Father in my name, whatever you ask, I will give it to you. And people use that from a religious standpoint to their complete frustration and ultimately their denial of God. Because they ask for things that don't happen. And yeah, they can explain away the selfish stuff. But what about the unselfish stuff? A child dying of cancer, a spouse that's plagued with a disease, unemployment and somehow getting it fixed, water for people in Kenya. There's lots of prayers that are just obviously God wants X, Y, or Z to happen. And I've asked him about it and it hasn't happened. But Jesus is not talking about a religious quid pro quo, you ask, I'll give. Then he becomes our servant. And that's the passage is not there. The passage is all about us abiding in him, remaining in him, his words in us, and let him remain us. So it's all about the relational engagement that invites me into the reality of a relationship with God where glory and joy and participation is this commingled thing that cannot be defined again. This is what I love about this series, what it has really quickened into my heart, is there's no way to express these things in principled constructs where you go to a seminar, you learn the five rules of a successful transformed life, and you do it. The commingling of this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit or that you pray in my name and God answers. That there's a mingling of our participation inside the Godhead, Father, Son, and Spirit engaging us where our joy, it's not the pain of following, it's the joy of knowing. And we talked about my joy might be in you, that your joy might be full. This is one of the things that completely astounds me and is still part of my journey. There is so much pain in the world. I see it every day from people that are being or have been abused sexually, physically, from people who've been bullied and repressed by others, from dying kids and older folks in Kenya to Syria to places all over the world to a bomb in Beirut to a hurricane in Florida to a fire in California. I mean, just watch the news for a little while and there is so much pain in the world. And God cares about all that pain. And God processes pain not in mass, but in individuals. And he identifies with it in that person and that person and that person. So every day he's got people that are overjoyed because something wonderful has happened in their life. He's got people who are in the throes of incredible grief or sorrow or torment or brokenness. And God holds all of that in himself in a way that I can't conceive of. I've had days where the first three emails of the day absolutely exhaust me. And I don't mean I got tired of reading it. I just mean the pain that some people face breaks my heart. And yet I know that the presence in the universe who holds all of our pain in himself is also the most joyful presence in the universe. And when I see people in critical moments of suffering or pain have a joy that's infectious. It's not circumstantial. It's somewhere in the deeper fulfillment of the heart, in spite of their grief, in spite of their struggle, in spite of their loss. There's a residence of joy that makes itself known because this presence is about joy, not just his, not just sating God's need to be served. The joy is for us to celebrate with him, to be in him and he in us, and that his joy might be in us and our joy be full. Yes, even in this broken world, even in that we get to experience his joy in a way that sets our hearts at rest and allows us to explore whatever else God might be doing in a situation that's might take us to an extremity. I tell you, the funniest, most joy-filled moments in my life, and we see this in movies sometimes, right? Good movies, I think, good, at least ones that are fun to watch. There's a lot of tension, and then there's something funny that happens that's uproariously funny, in part because we're so stressed by everything else going on. It's Indiana Jones surrounded by these guys with swords and whips, and they're going to kill him, and he's standing there outnumbered by everybody, and this big Hulk's about ready to take him out, and then he remembers he has a gun. He pulls out a gun and shoots the guy. Now, I realize killing people's not an answer stuff, but that moment in the movie is hilarious. First time I saw it, every time I see it, I think that's hilarious. It's hilarious because of the tension and the trauma, and then there's this humorous aside that gets him out of it and moves him on. There's a joy in the broken places of our life, and that joy is what this whole process of transformation fulfills. Something about us that we talked about earlier that seeks for significance, seeks for fulfillment, seeks for success. And we almost always head at that in temporal terms. Success is how much visibility I gain in social media, or how much money I make, or what home I live in, or how many friends I have. Or we look at success from a very selfish platform. And what we know about people is the more you hang out with people who have more than you do, the more depressed you are. And I don't mean just more financially, though I mean that too. It's just have more happiness or more joy or more that their circumstances are pleasant. So I don't really mean joy, I mean happiness. And when you hang around that, it's easy to get depressed that my life isn't that way. And then as people hang out with folks who have less than they do, who have need, and their heart of compassion is touched by that, and so they give their lives away to people who are broken and hurting, that's where the greatest of joys comes from. And it's so counterintuitive to us. It's Henry Nouwen moving from being a famous writer, a pastor, and doing all this exquisite stuff and built a name for himself and then put it all aside and went to go care for a man who needed round-the-clock care by another human being. And he doesn't talk about that as what he gave up to go do something horrible for Jesus. He says his greatest fulfillment came in serving that individual. He's passed away now. It's hard to imagine, right? Because when you're living by your illusions, success is measured in all kinds of things that are external, temporal, will not endure. And if you're trying to follow Jesus and trying to have external success, you're probably going to be disappointed a lot because you'll end up seeking the success instead of seeking him. And even if you get the success you wanted externally, it won't fulfill you the way you hoped it would fulfill you. We need a whole different definition of what success is. Success is not measured in bank account. It's not measured in likes on Facebook or whether your video went viral. Success in this world is, going back to last week, following the Lamb wherever he goes. It's Isaiah sharing until the last person in Israel rejects him. That's success. For Jesus, when he prays the prayer about Father be glorified, it means he's going to a cross to die one of the most horrible deaths that could be done, could be placed on another individual. He dies. But the fact that he endures to the end, the fact that he goes through with it, the fact that God's with him through it, that is his success that translates to all of us. We're part of a kingdom that doesn't measure success in monetary gain, in comfort, in how well thought of we are by others, in anything other than I've been faithful to the Lamb wherever he's gone, and he's provided everything that I need. And that's what it really means to have a successful life, that I have been loved. If you want to measure success, measure it in relationships. That's what makes us rich. It's the friendships in my life. It's the people I know. It's the conversations that unpack God's heart to me. And it's some just people I love who are still in a broken place, and they don't love back a lot. But it's being there for them when they need it. It's opening my heart and loving them. That's success. That's what makes us rich. Now, don't measure that on relationships with abusive people, because then the enemy's going to come along and say, well, you don't have such a great relationship with that person. You should be doing more. You can chase abusive people down and keep laying your life down and keep trying to open that door. Paul gives us a great out there in Romans. Be as much as it lies within you, be at peace with all people. So be at peace. Even if other people are not at peace with you, that's not your job. Not your job to make sure everybody's got it right. What I'm talking about in terms of being rich in relationships is having the wholeness inside the people you know and the friendships you have, that there's a freedom not to use people for what you want from them, not to make people the victim of your coping mechanism or indulgence or insecurities, so that people have got to give you what you need so that you have worth from them. None of that's helpful. But wholesome relationships with people who genuinely love and care about you and you genuinely love and care about them, that's a place you could measure success. But as Isaiah, maybe even if you're all alone, maybe if no one is on the journey you're on right now, that there's a communion inside Jesus that's loving and sweet and fabulous, and we get to enjoy that. So we move from, yeah, he's always right. But in the reality of what he's right about is he wants to lead us to the place where the fullness of his joy dwells in us and that our joy is full in him. So it's not at all God using us. It's still God loving us. It's still God inviting us to be part of the greatest kingdom in the world. It's still part of God transforming our self-preferring ways. The coping mechanisms we think we need, and I've said this before, they served us well in abuse. Coping mechanism, when you're a little kid and you're being abused and you find a coping mechanism that gives you some comfort, some relief, I understand how that happens for lots of people. But when you get out of that situation, then it's time to let that coping mechanism go as well, because it's in the way of you having this fullness of joy and fullness of life. If I could do anything for people who listen to this podcast or read some of the stuff I've written, if I could do anything, it would be this. It really would, to help you know Jesus well enough that you know what he wants for you is a fullness of joy that is deep and rich and abiding, and that it's not measured in temporal terms. It's measured in the treasure of a relationship with him and the treasure of relationships with others that he gives you, whether it's people who need you and you're just serving out your life with them, or whether it's good friends that you can sit and laugh and celebrate the joy of a journey. This is what I love about this story and about God and how he works. It's this whole blend, grace and truth in the same reality, not grace at the expense of truth or truth at the expense of grace. It's grace and truth as one blended reality. And now this, it's, yes, do whatever I command you. Follow me because I want my joy to be in you and your joy full. So obedience and joy are right inside that reality too. That they blend together in a way that's mystical and wonderful, and we can't ever figure it out. What I do know is this. When I pursue my joy and try to enlist God to pursue it as well, I rarely find it. When I instead embrace what it means to follow him wherever he leads, that I find myself in the midst of joy that's greater than anything I've ever manufactured on my own. Because those joys are fleeting. That's happiness based on circumstance. And I had moments like that where, yeah, everything's great. But the joy is still fleeting. Circumstances still turn. We're still living in an age That's beneath all God wants and has for us. And so now, the joy of a life well lived, is a life that's learned to behold, to believe, and to follow. And whatever circumstances result, however it is that God shapes the way we respond in the world, is that which leads us to life and joy more precious than any we could find on our own if we created the what we think are the perfect circumstances. Because this one's not dependent on what anybody else is doing or what's going on in the world. It comes from the simple joy of knowing Him and being at rest in His love.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.